everyone. I'm Lisa.
And I'm Nick.
And you're listening to It Takes Two, the podcast where two people take two movies with the same plot or premise and watch and discuss them.
And in this episode, we are covering off Grand Theft Infant with 1987's Raising Arizona and 2001's Nobody's Baby.
That should be the name of the episode, Grand Theft Infant.
Yeah, I thought of it yesterday.
Yeah, so this one I planned as a fun episode, but I think these are just like very similar.
They are
stupidly similar.
Yeah, obviously, they're not twin films because there's a huge like gap between the production of these, but yeah, they're the same. Well, not quite the same.
Yeah, movie, they're not quite the same. They definitely are. Like, I don't think you could, by any manner of means, claim that Nobody's Baby is a remake of Raising Arizona, but there's definitely, the plots are a lot closer than I feel like I remembered them being. I have seen Nobody's Baby more often than I've seen Raising Arizona, which is probably the opposite to most people who've probably never even heard of Nobody's Baby.
Yeah, it's a very interesting fact you told me while we were watching it, that you used to break into people's homes
and tie them up. I didn't say that. I said I had it on DVD and I watched it a lot, and I used to just sometimes go to people's houses. I meant like I was going there as a friend, and I would bring my copy of Nobody's Baby to be like, hey, do you want to watch Nobody's Baby while I'm here?
See, what you told me in person,
I didn't
before
say,
there was a recording device.
I didn't say
device,
I was breaking in. I just said I'd go to people's homes and watch Nobody's Baby.
And my response was, did you know these people? And you're like, no.
I did know these people. Yeah. I did know these people. I just thought that was a funny question. Yeah, I used to watch it a lot. I still really enjoy it. I think it's a very enjoyable movie. It's got 0% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow.
which is undeserved, because it's way better than a lot of stuff, than other stuff I've seen that's got higher ratings than 0 on Rotten Tomatoes.
So once you've done signing up to our mailing list on our website, It Takes Two. .co.nz.
Go rate.
Joining our Discord.
Oh, okay.
And then go rate this movie up higher, because it deserves more than a 0. No, it was very enjoyable.
I think it's at 6.2 or so. It's 6 point something on IMDb.
Yeah,
which
makes
feels
more
correct to me. I mean, I wouldn't, if it was at like 50% on Rotten Tomatoes, I'd understand. 0% feels very low. Apparently the like director of Sundance, because it's premiered at Sundance but then didn't get any actual theatrical release, but apparently the director of Sundance loved it, thought it was a delight from start to finish, thought it was a great movie, and then like critics absolutely hated it. They were just like, this is terrible.
Both movies, as we get into the movies and rather than our back and forth here, are about convicts basically stealing / rescuing babies.
Yeah.
Skeet Ulrich playing Billy Ray Dean. It was some white trash name. Being that my middle name is also William. It's very interesting because there's a real love, like father son, but not really father son relationship between him and Gary Oldman's character.
Yeah, Buford.
And the other way around, sort of with Raising Arizona, where the actual theft of a baby comes involved sort of out of desperation, where Billy's actually doing the right thing and stealing the baby.
Yeah, and it's interesting because in Nobody's Baby, he tries multiple times to get the baby to its real family.
Yeah.
And no one wants it. It's like a whole thing that the baby is like part of an adoption scam, and it's a weird, like, the family that the baby was with, who were in a car accident and he rescued the baby, don't have any record of having a baby.
Yeah.
And he was like, okay, that's weird. And then he tried to reach out to their family and they were like, no, we don't want anything to do with the baby.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he found out about this adoption scam and he tried to talk to the guy who had tried to adopt the baby and he didn't want the baby.
Do you know the thing that I took away from watching both these movies is the person whose baby it is are both shyster salesmen?
Yeah.
We've got, I don't remember his actual name. I was going to call him Ed. But
Ed O'Neill?
Ed O'Neill, that's the one.
That's the actor's name.
Yeah. Ed O'Neill is a...
Pinkney, I think, is the character name.
He's a used car salesman, and he preys on people who are in gambling debt.
Yes.
And buys their cars off them for half what they're worth, and then sells them for double, basically making his money back and more. Two idiots, because they're all like... the kind of cars that people who are compulsive gamblers would own.
Mm. And also, it is set in Nevada, so it is, you know, there are a lot of gambling addicts.
And Raising Arizona is about a man who sells unpainted furniture, who has been feeding his wife, like, I was going to say fertilization, but that's not the right word. What is the word?
Fertility
drugs, to the point where she had 5 children.
Yeah.
And they, like, decide that they're going to steal one, because why can't they have a child when these people have 5?
Yeah.
And it's almost an argument about classism at that point.
Yeah, I think...
because they are very, like, Nicolas Cage is an ex-con. I cannot remember the name of the actor who played the... police officer slash...
Holly Hunter.
Is, unfortunately for them, barren. So they can't have children. And it's basically because of this thing they were trying to do, which is have a child together, they're basically spiraling back into their old habits. Mm. She was alone. This very funny introduction, because she's taking his like mugshot at
going into prison. Both movies start with kind of a montage of mugshots. Introducing the characters of being in and out of prison.
Yeah.
Well, after Nobody's Baby starts with, I guess, Billy's dad being shot in the head through a window.
Yeah.
Is the opening scene. So trigger warning if you're gonna watch Nobody's Baby.
Yeah, yeah.
But then it proceeds to like him and Buford in the orphanage, and then they get into all these, you know, shenanigans together. And it's mainly in both cases, really,
robbing convenience stores.
Well, yeah, but I was gonna say in both cases it's that they're kind of like, it is a comment on classism to begin with, that it's these people don't have, you know, they've grown up in a situation where they don't have parental figures, because they do mention that H.I.'s parents in Raising Arizona also are dead.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have parents, they don't seem to have any kind of formal education, they don't have any income. You know, they are trying to get by, and also are, you know, on the lower side IQ wise, but fundamentally trying to be good and don't know how to do that.
Yeah.
And keep getting into these situations where they have to like commit a crime to keep going, but they're committing dumb crimes.
The other thing that was like identical in both these movies is like dictating letters.
Yes.
Which I was like, in the first one, like Skeet Ulrich's character's doing it as this like, you know, eventually, when I find a piece of paper, I'll write this down. In the meantime, I'm memorizing this letter I'm going to read, write to you.
Yeah.
And I've done this 1,000 times and I've forgotten all of them, but this one I'll remember.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just a very weird, like, thing to be similar. Like, there's a lot of similarities between these movies.
There's definitely, I mean, there must be to some extent. I couldn't find anything to say that it was based on, but there must, like, because Raising Arizona is such a well-known film.
Yeah.
It must have been, at least some of Nobody's Baby must have been deliberate homages to it or references to it.
No, there was definitely, they're both, see, normally when we come to these episodes, there's one movie that's like easily dislikable by both of us, and we can really rip into it. And I'm really struggling, because both of these movies are really fun.
Yeah. I'd say Raising Arizona is a better movie.
Yes.
I don't argue that, but I think they're both really enjoyable.
Because it was the first time I'd seen Nobody's Baby.
Yeah. I would love to hear what your thoughts on Nobody's Baby are, as someone who had never seen it before.
I think the acting was fantastic. The incidents that happen, the framing of certain incidents is all very well done. for those who haven't seen it, the moment where Billy is given, because this whole lead up, he's escaped, he's by himself. It's probably the first time in his life he's been by himself, because even when him and Gary Oldman end up going to prison, they go to prison together, and that's why they end up reoffending, and that's why the judge is like, no, you should be separated. He's carrying like a sun umbrella down the motorway, and a family pull up and they're like, hey, look, you know, tit for tat, you fix our tire, we'll give you a ride. He's like, is there any room in your car? And then they're like, don't worry about it, just fix our tire.
Yeah.
And then it's like the weirdest transactional, like, if you drop anything out of our car, I'll deduct 10 miles off your like hitchhiking distance.
Yeah.
And then he ends up replacing the tire, and then they just drive off. The next scene, he's like in the back of a truck with the like thing open, and he's going on about these dreams that he's having, and then he ends up bumping into the same family again. And because of his, like, he moans them, the dad's very angry in the car, and then they end up having a collision with in a tunnel with the truck that he's in and the car. And he is given this opportunity to, like, there's a baby crying in the car, everybody else is dead because, like, the mum in the car is, like, folded backwards and sticking outside the windscreen. And the truck driver is freaking out and trying to drive away.
Because he's got no insurance.
And it is this very moment of him looking at the car, hearing the baby, wanting to rescue the baby, looking at his way out of the situation as the driver's trying to get away. And in the flashback and forth is like, literally like, here's your two paths.
Yeah.
There's no railroading in the situation. He made his decision, saves the baby. The truck ends up causing sparks as it grinds across the side of the tunnel, lighting a fire, which blows up the car with everybody inside. Well, because the mum on the way out realizes that she's just unconscious. You know, I think the framing of that is like absolutely perfectly done. And it's interesting because there's also that turn. It happens in both the movies, was when the criminal element is reintroduced to both their lives. Mm. In Raising Arizona is when his buddies who's been in prison with, who are in the same therapy, one's played by John Candy.
Not John Candy.
John Goodman and his little brother both escape from prison and like are holding out. First off, how they know where they lived. But they end up holding out of their property, and it's very much the same when Gary Oldman comes back into the picture, because he is borderline deranged in a very sweet way.
Mm.
He doesn't understand, like, as you said, that it's very much a thing on classism. The people that he's associating with are also not great people.
Yeah.
They're sort of living in this weird little not trailer park trailer park. The reason he's allowed to stay is because one of the people who live at the trailer park gave up their child for adoption, but it's still short enough ago that she's still producing milk. Another one of the girls is a like line dancer at some sleazy place. And then the girl who first sort of rescues him and brings him to this community is like a diner waitress. Pause on that train of thought. When you saw Pitch Black,
I think when we watched Pitch Black, I was like, this person's familiar to me, but I don't think
you didn't put the pieces together.
Yeah, or maybe I looked it up at the time and went, oh, okay, but I have forgotten it since. Whereas, yeah, I don't think I ever looked up why Skyler White was familiar to me when we tried to watch Breaking Bad. And then when we were watching this, I was like, oh, that's where I know her from.
Yeah, it's Fry and Skyler. And
Mary Steenburgen.
Yeah. And, yeah, you just get this sort of, like, weird sort of amalgamation of what would be happening in the trailer park, you know. The physical abuse, the only thing that I found very weird was like the Native American man who wants to build a teepee out of bottle caps.
Mm-hmm.
and the rich guy who, like, does charter boats.
Mm.
And that whole scene where he just, like, loses his shit and, from the audience point of view, throws the baby into the water because none of them can swim properly.
Yeah.
And then they're, like, okay with it and still, like, interact with him. And I was just like, no, like, I'd get back on that boat and kill that guy. Like, even though it's a fake and he switches it with the dog. Also animal cruelty, like, really, really messed up situation. It is borderline sub-reality. Like, this is not a realistic sort of snapshot of whatever year it's supposed to be set in. Yeah. It doesn't feel like 2001. It feels earlier.
But you could say the same about Raising Arizona.
Yeah.
That it very much, like, is kind of hyper-real to some extent. And I think a lot of Coen Brothers movies are.
Yeah.
That there's, you know, the running gag of the guys leaving the baby on top of the car and then having to go back and get him. You know.
Also the bounty hunter chasing.
The bounty hunter who Nick Cage dreams about first.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when he sees him in real life and Ed can see him too and he's like, you can see that guy?
It's, that whole sequence is very funny. This is a little tidbit about Nicolas Cage that you might not know. There was a very interesting person who came along throughout in the past. His name was Dog the Bounty Hunter.
Right.
He was a bounty hunter operating off the... I think he was in Hawaii. Him and Nicolas Cage were friends.
Oh,
and
really?
He ended up bailing Nicolas Cage out at some point when he was, like, trapped somewhere in his sort of, like, downturn era before he came back again.
Yeah.
Which I thought was just very funny because I was just like, the guy's just Dog the Bounty Hunter, like, turned to 11.
Mm.
You know, the dual shotguns, throwing grenades at bunny rabbits in the desert, shooting, like...
Shooting lizards, yeah. Just sitting on rocks in the desert.
It's just like, if you take in Terminator from Terminator 2, the good Terminator from Terminator 2, turned it up to 11, made him, like, the most redneck, like, drifter cowboy... And then turned him into some sort of demon.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of flashes towards, like, Mandy, Ghost Rider that came to my mind.
Yeah, yeah. Occasionally being in movies with bikers from hell.
Yeah. Like I said, going back to Nobody's Baby, it is definitely, like, a little bit more sub-reality than reality. Definitely feels older than when it's, like, filmed. The comedy, most of the time, it hits pretty hard. There were some moments where it was just like, I don't know about that joke now.
Also, I don't think it's supposed to be set in a different time period. I think it's just highlighting how far removed small rural communities in southwest of America are from what we think of as, like, big modern cities in America.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, no, it was definitely an enjoyable movie.
Yeah. It's a fun one.
I think, because you were saying this was filmed in the downport of Gary Oldman's career as well.
Yeah, so Gary Oldman okay. I know way too much about Gary Oldman.
Yeah, so for a fun fact, never play 6 Degrees with Separation with Lisa if that person you're picking or the other person you're picking was in any movie with Gary Oldman.
I've seen most of them.
Yeah, because you're doomed.
I do have a collection back in Ireland of, like, DVDs of obscure movies with Gary Oldman in them, including Nobody's Baby. But he...
Have you got Tiptoes on DVD?
I don't have Tiptoes on DVD. Yeah. I have Sin, which is the absolutely terrible movie he did with Ving Rhames, and no one should ever watch that movie. I have Track 29, which also no one should ever watch, but I did get the... the DP, director of photography, is that right? Or maybe it was cinematographer? Anyway, I met the person who did the, you know, I think cinematography on that film. Because he also did, I think, The Hurt Locker. I think he did a Hurt Locker, and I was and I met him and when I was in college, and I asked him to sign my Track 29 DVD, and he was like, I literally didn't know they made this on DVD. And I was like, yep, they do. They sure do. It's a weird movie where it's very heavily implied that we're like, okay, let's not get into that movie actually. Anyway, weird movie.
I'm now intrigued.
So this point in Gary Oldman's career, he had made a movie called The Contender, where he played, I believe, a Republican senator or maybe congressman. And Gary Oldman, for those who don't know, I don't know his politics nowadays, so I don't want to like make people assume things about him that I don't know about who he has voted for recently. But certainly in the early 2000s, Gary Oldman was a card-carrying Republican in the United States of America. And they, when the film was edited, they removed any redeeming qualities of the character that he was playing and made him into like cartoon villain.
Right.
And as a card carrying Republican who thought that he was in a movie that was displaying both sides of the coin, he got very upset about it. And then, got blacklisted by Hollywood because of his reaction to that. He also supported Mel Gibson in some shit he said. So wasn't a great time.
Yeah.
And then essentially, so no like class, so like Steven Spielberg, etc., all had a vendetta against Gary Oldman at that point. So no one would cast him in movies until younger directors came around, like I think Alfonso Cuarón and obviously Christopher Nolan, who cast him in the Batman series. So between 2000, when The Contender came out, and 2005, when he was in Prisoner of Azkaban and Batman Begins, Gary Oldman was in almost entirely absolute garbage movies.
Yeah, because it's so funny. I've just pulled it up just for...
Oh, you're looking at what he was in that time?
Yeah, so like True Romance, 93, Leon the Professional, 94.
Yeah.
Fifth Element, 97, Air Force One, 97, The Contender, 2000, and then it's just like Harry Potter and then Dark Knight.
Yeah, but what are the movies in between The Contender and Harry Potter and Batman Begins?
God, I have no idea. Like, just, well, this movie for an example.
Yeah, oh, sorry, I thought you were looking at a list.
No, I was just going through.
And like, I was going to say, like, it's ridiculous. Like, you will either have not heard of them or be like, oh my God, that's a terrible film. I have seen, I think, all of them that were released in that time period. And I can tell you, this is the only one that's, like, remotely a good movie. I can have a look. So we had The Contender, 2000. Then he did Nobody's Baby. Oh, he was in Hannibal in 2001. So that, well, that was probably filmed earlier.
Yeah.
Interstate 60, where he plays a leprechaun. Beat the Devil. Oh, that's a short film. Then he was in Tiptoes. For anyone who doesn't know what Tiptoes is, it's Gary Oldman plays the dwarf brother of Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah.
And then he was in Sin, which is absolutely terrible. Absolutely terrible movie. And then he was in Prisoner of Azkaban, Batman Begins. So that whole slew of films are awful. This is the best one of a lot of them. Though Tiptoes is fun to watch in that, like, it's an absolute train wreck. And the only thing good about Tiptoes is Peter Dinklage is in it, and he's really good. And then you're like, why am I not watching a movie about this character?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or why did they not cast Peter Dinklage as the main dwarf in the movie instead of Gary Oldman?
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, so this is the best of a bad bunch of movies. And it is, as we discovered looking into it, or watching it, it's produced by Gary Oldman and Doug Urbanski, who's Gary Oldman's manager/agent. So I assume while he was struggling to get any other roles, because you can see, that's also, you know, you were listing that he's in multiple big name films in a year, you know, each year in the 90s. The fact that he's only in a handful of films in that time period as well, is pretty telling. So he obviously was struggling to get any roles.
Yeah.
So I guess one of the ways to do that is to go, yeah, we'll put the money behind this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Let's produce it. I think all the actors are really good in it.
Yeah.
I genuinely think the performances are really good. I don't, you know.
There's very much like, I think I think it's been more famous with Game of Thrones, where actors playing characters get hate mail addressed to the character they're playing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it was very, very, very interesting with Game of Thrones because, like, Lena Headey, was basically, like, shunned by people not wanting her signature when she was at Comic-Con.
Right, because like, they don't like Cersei Lannister.
And it feels very much the same way with the actor who played Skylar in
Breaking Bad.
Breaking Bad. Yeah. She also got a lot of, like, angry fan mail.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very funny watching her play... Because I don't think, off the top of my head, I could name something else she's been in.
No.
And it was just very funny just be like, oh, no, she's just like this can-can dancer thing who's sleeping with an old Indian man who wants to build a teepee out of bottle caps.
Yeah.
While Skeech Ulrich's got the stolen baby while he's basically... Everyone's emotionally blackmailed a lady who gave away their baby into breastfeeding and... him trying to get back with Gary Oldman. It was just like that whole, the whole turn of events when he gets the baby is just so, it's not sped up, but it is just such a moment of like so many pieces falling into place that it's almost like teeth on a gear rather than like, you know, like stepping stones.
Yeah. I do think, I feel like, because Raising Arizona, it's like you said, the kind of central, you know, driving point is that they want a baby and she's infertile.
Yeah.
But other than that, like, they're getting by okay, and then it's only when, you know, that things start to spiral because A, she decides she wants to steal the baby even though she was an officer of law, and B, his friends who are criminals show up. But in Nobody's Baby, the kind of central driving point of it is... that he's got this baby and he needs to find a way to provide for it.
Yeah.
Because that's his main goal. And it's very, I felt like, you know, there's moments in that when after he first rescues the baby where I think it really, and I think poignant to Nevada because it has a huge homeless problem, because of, you know, gambling availability and how the cities, you know, or major cities in Nevada are set up. It really kind of highlighted, you know, how difficult it is to have to try and look after your family in poverty.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's got nothing. He's got nothing but the clothes on his back, and, you know, he's just in, because he tries to put out the fire and sets fire to his jeans or whatever. So he's just him in a t-shirt and his underwear and a naked baby or a baby with a diaper, and the baby, you know, goes potty pretty nastily, and he ends up using his shirt as a new diaper. So it's literally just this guy. He doesn't even have the clothes.
Gives the shirt off his back to the baby.
So he doesn't even have the clothes on his back. He doesn't have any money. He doesn't have any way to contact anyone. He has no support network. You know, he's in the middle of nowhere, essentially. Yeah. You know, and they, you know, he steals some clothes, but again, that's still having to steal in order to provide. And he gets this waitress to give him some milk for the baby. And it's only that she, out of the gut of her heart, says, okay, come on, I know someone who can help. You know, and she very much is being cautious and saying, you know, I normally don't let anyone in my car unless I know them, but so you know that you are only getting in here because I care about that, looking after that baby. But he could just have easily have come across someone who had no interest in helping, you know, and then it's, how do you even feed a baby when you're just out on the street by yourself with nothing?
The other movie that came to mind was Shoot 'Em Up,
which I haven't seen.
Yeah. Which again is about a homeless man getting a baby.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. And I was like watching this and like knowing, it's like, you know, if we did three movies for a podcast for an episode, you know, massive delay caused to, like, you know, then I've got Shoot 'Em Up on DVD, so it wouldn't have been very, we wouldn't have to go to the library or anything to find a copy. But It's yeah, I was just thinking like, oh yeah, you know, very much along the lines of man with no future, getting a hold of a baby, you know, shenanigans ensure, finds woman who can breastfeed the baby.
Really?
Yeah.
I have no idea what the Potter Shidwell was. That's insane. I didn't know it was the same as, are we going to have to do Nobody's Baby again with Shidwell sometime?
Maybe. That's
funny.
Put it on, yeah, for 2032.
Yeah.
Asteroid's
going to hit.
Yeah. It'd be the last episode we produce. No, no, it's like everything about both these movies, watching them back to back, like I said earlier, like, it's, normally I find the movie that's worse and just be like, here's how everything was done worse, here's everything was done better, here's what I would have done. But, like, genuinely, in these two movies, they were both, like, sit-down enjoyable. Like, if you get an opportunity to watch either of these and you've never seen them, please do it.
Yeah.
I'm not saying, like, pause the podcast and go watch them now, like I've said on other episodes, or, like, don't listen to it unless you've seen these.
Yeah. I will say I'm glad, because obviously, like I said, I used to watch Nobody's Baby all the time, but it's been a while.
Yeah.
So I am glad that it did hold up and we didn't watch and you were going, why did you used to watch this movie?
That
because that happens sometimes with things, you know.
You have a very, like, that is a very deranged thing to do.
To what? Just watch it all the time?
No, to like, you know.
Bring the DVD with me to people's houses? Yeah. I mean, you know, or it wouldn't, not just like annual, people that I watched movies with.
Right.
I would show up like, oh, hey, I've got this movie we could watch. You know, and not, I wasn't just showing up to like, you know, go over to borrow some sugar and be like, oh, do you want to watch this? You know, it's going to someone's home to spend some time with them. A
group sleepover.
Knowing that often we do watch movies together, to be like, oh, well, I brought this. You know, I'd sometimes bring like a handful over and be like, oh, here's my suggestions of some movies. Yeah. Do you want to watch any of these? And I think Nobody's Baby did make it to a few people's houses.
Mm.
I did, like, I distinctly remember watching it with you know, particular people I was friends with at the time. So it was a movie that I would bring over and be like, hey, you want to watch this one? Because I just really enjoyed it. It seemed like, and it was a movie that I had fun watching, so I had no problem watching it multiple times, you know? Because it'd be like, some movies are good and you're like, oh, I could recommend this to someone, but I don't necessarily want to go watch it with them.
Whereas this,
it's like, hey, this one's fun and stupid and we can put it on and talk and, you know, whatever. I do think, you know, in terms of who did what better, I do think, obviously, the writing of the Coen brothers is a lot cleaner, a lot tidier.
Yeah, that's...
Because that's, you know...
You're punching what they're like. On that.
Like, yeah. They're incredible writers, you know, that's what they do. I do know, you know, from looking into it, that they really clashed with Nick Cage, which is probably why, you know... the Coen brothers, who are famous for casting the same people in multiple movies, have never worked with Nick Cage again. I don't think. They have said like they loved working with Nick Cage, but also their styles just didn't really mesh because he's very much a guy who likes to improvise and has a lot of ideas and suggestions. They're coming in with a complete like script storyboard. It must go shot for shot like this. Yeah. So they didn't, you know. That doesn't really work very well, but I know I think Ethan Coen said, you know, as much as their styles didn't really work together, he would much rather work with someone like Nick Cage, who's got like this vast imagination, over someone who really takes a lot of pushing to get them, you know, to see the vision. But yeah, so they obviously do rock up to their films with like, here's the script, here's the storyboard, here's the quick witty dialogue, here's, you know, the affectation this character should have, here, you know, because I think they wrote the, all of the, like, dialogue and speech patterns of the characters in Raising Arizona are based on, like, classic Southern American novels and things like that, and then also, like, passages from the Bible, but then also just, like, how people in those areas generally speak mixed in with that.
Yeah.
So they do, you know, they wanted to look and sound in a very particular way, which I imagine was not as much of a concern.
For Nicolas Cage.
Nobody's Baby.
Nobody's Baby, right.
Yeah, I think Nicolas Cage is fully on board with that kind of stuff, but he also just likes to improvise and come up with his own ideas. Yeah, whereas, if, yeah, so Nobody's Baby obviously loses a little bit in that it doesn't have that, you know, amazing writing team behind it who have got, like, this very clear vision of exactly how it should go. But I think, I don't think the writing was bad, though. I think it's just not as witty and clean and, you know.
Yeah, I definitely think it's the performance of Gary Oldman that really elevates it to something better than it would have been without him.
Because his critics disagree.
Yeah, well, his mannerisms in this, well, I disagree with 99% of critics.
Yeah, because that was one of the things the critics said, were like, what the hell is Gary Oldman doing?
Yeah, but that's the whole point, though, right? Like,
yeah.
His character is unhinged.
I do love the idea of, like, Gary Oldman in a period of time where he's not getting hired for roles being like, I'm just going to play the most fun batshit character.
It's the moment where they go to Ed and they're trying to, like, blackmail him and it's just like, you know, I've got security cameras, I've got your face, I've got your idiot friend who's, like, over there. Sticking his head out of the thing. And he just, like, the camera pans over to where Gary Oldman's character is. And he's, like, waist out of the van, staring at them across the street. Like, could you be any more obvious of what you're doing? Yeah.
Can I talk about, so in both movies there is a moment where they, where, you know, the father character is influenced to go back to crime, to pull a heist in order to be able to provide for the baby. Because you've got, you know, Gary Oldman's, or not Gary Oldman, oh my god, you've got Nick Cage's friends, you know, John Goodman and the other guy, so they're, who are they, Gail and Everil? Is that right? Gail and Evel, I think.
Yeah.
Who are, you know, convincing him to do this bank heist so that he can get the money to look after the kid. And in Nobody's Baby, what's her name? Stormy, I think is her name. So Stormy, the dancer, says she knows a guy who works in a pawn shop who's willing to let someone rob the pawn shop for a $1,000 deposit and half of what they make out of it.
Yeah.
They rock up to check out the pawn shop and the guy is coming out and he's like, hey, we're thinking of robbing this joint. Are you the guy we gotta talk to? It's like, what's wrong with you? It's no wonder you've been arrested so many times.
And it's also the moment where they're like, no, like, this is not how we do it. Like, you do the cash handover to me, like, in a public place where no one will notice it. So they do it in a church by folding the money into a Bible and handing it to him over another pew.
It's very sneaky, underhanded, very, like, well done. And then they walk out.
Yeah. And he just walks straight up to him and he's just like, hey, can we hash over the details? He's like, what are you doing? Like, now you have to wear masks.
Oh, that's so funny. Yeah, I think he's fantastic in it.
It's the dancing.
He's just playing, like, a ridiculous character.
It's the dancing being so focused about the guitar to the point where it, like, kills him / saves his life.
Yeah, it's from near the beginning. There's a bit in the beginning where they're in, because the whole thing happens because they've been separated because they have escaped from they're being like detained and brought somewhere after being in a courthouse, and they managed to you know, get the keys from the guard and get their handcuffs off, but they get separated. But right before that, they're in the courthouse and the judge, as you mentioned earlier, is telling them, you know, obviously it's not working with you guys going to the same detention centers, same prisons, whatever. So you're going to be detained separately. And he says to them, you know, it's clear that you'll never amount to anything or whatever like that. And Billy says, no, you're wrong. I will amount to something. And Gary Oldman's character Buford just goes like, oh, you're right about me, though. Nothing. So he fully knows that this is just the life for him. What he, you know, he doesn't have the intelligence level, certainly. He doesn't have any kind of actual upbringing. He doesn't have any, you know, education. He doesn't have any money or source of income. He doesn't have any prospects except to continue to do what he's doing because it's the only thing he knows to do.
Yeah.
But he genuinely cares for Billy as like a younger brother, or like you said, he's almost like a fatherly figure to him. Yeah. I think it's supposed to be not too much of an age gap because they were in an orphanage together. And you know, he does want the best for him, but he also has no idea how to provide that.
Yeah.
He's absolutely no idea. And he doesn't know how to help with the baby. And he doesn't, you know, he doesn't quite understand that Billy genuinely wants to care for the baby and look after it and treat it as his own. Yeah, it's a...
Jumping forward to the end, the mm-hmm. main difference between these two movies are the ending.
Yeah, and it's funny because they do almost start to have the same ending a little bit. So in Nobody's Baby, nobody wants the baby or who actually like is associated with it.
Yeah.
But the lady who gave up, so Mary Steenburgen's character, Estelle, I think, who gave up her baby for adoption, the baby daddy comes back and decides he wants the baby and him and his fiance are going to look after it. And she has to tell him they don't have it anymore. And Billy, in both cases, so in Raising Arizona and in Nobody's Baby, you have the parents, you know, the kind of stolen parents, realizing that they can't provide for the baby what the baby needs and giving it up. So in Raising Arizona, they sneak the baby back into the house and give it back to his real family. And in Nobody's Baby, he decides he's going to go to Lake Tahoe and give the baby to this guy and his fiance.
Yeah.
And but there was a little bit of a Chekhov's gun earlier in the movie where, you know, the baby daddy had arrived back just after 60 days had passed. And in the state of Nevada, you have up to 60 days to reconsider giving your baby up for adoption. And the joke is that Billy took 60 seconds. He left and started to walk away and then turned around and was like, nope, no, actually, I'm keeping the baby. Yeah. And you know, they've built a little community. It's a weird oddball community, but you know, he definitely cares for the baby. And we do get to see a little bit of a flash forward where she's, I think, 7 or 8. She's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And does seem quite happy.
Versus Raising Arizona, where they end up returning the baby back to the sleazy furniture salesman. And it's sort of like non-legitimate godparents from like the rest of the kid's life by sending them.
Yeah, it's not really clear because it's H.I. McDonough is talking about his dreams for the baby. So he's like dreaming of a future. It doesn't necessarily tell us that is what happened, though his previous dream did come true with the weird biker guy. Anyway, and his vision for the future is that, you know, they send the baby gifts on Christmas, on anonymous, you know, anonymous gifts or whatever, and that they keep an eye on his life over the years, because obviously the quintuplets are, you know, in the news and things, and the father owns the furniture store, you know, and he's envisioning that like the kid will grow up and become like an American football star, and he'll get to go watch him play games and things like that.
Do you want to jump into some trivia?
I don't have a lot.
Okay.
We've kind of covered off most of the bits I did have, to be honest. The only thing I had for Nobody's Baby other than what we said was that Gary Oldman spent a lot of time with the twin girls playing the baby while they were filming. And he, you know, he was feeling very homesick for his own children, which probably is part of why, you know, by the time he got around to doing like Prisoner of Azkaban and the Batman movies and stuff, he would put it into his contracts that his shift times would have to allow for him to be finished in time to pick up his kids from school and spend time with them. So he would spend all the time with the babies on set because he missed his own kids. For Raising Arizona, also a baby related fact. So there were 15 babies playing the quintuplets.
Wow.
Obviously I just mentioned there was two, like I said, a twin girls playing the girl in Nobody's Baby. So there's 15 babies playing the quintuplets. And one of the babies got fired during production because he learned how to walk. They couldn't have the baby standing and walking. And the mother of the baby wanted the baby to stay in the production, so she was even like putting his shoes on backwards to try and stop him from getting up and walking around. But they were like, no, this baby walks, so we can't do it. And then the only other bit of trivia I had was a filmmaking thing, which is there's a shot in it where the baby is in a car seat in the middle of the road and they drive the car up at speed and then stop abruptly right before hitting the baby.
Yeah.
So that is done practically, but they filmed it in reverse.
Right.
So they had the baby there and them in the car and then they reversed at speed away from it. Though, I mean, like, I would still be worried that you're going to, you know, accidentally, you know, put it in the wrong direction. But obviously it worked. There's not really any point doing budget and box office because, as I mentioned, Nobody's Baby didn't get a theatrical release in the end. We can talk about Raising Arizona if you want, but that's probably not.
Did it make a profit?
Yeah, it definitely made a profit. Yeah. It had a budget of $6 million, which was, I think, $5 million on the production and $1 million on marketing.
Right.
And it made $29 million, so pretty good. Yeah, that's about it.
Wonderful.
There
are six reviews on Rotten Tomatoes
of Nobody's Baby.
Yeah, so we could actually fix it. So, like, let's, I said, get earlier, in. Get in there.
Fix
it. Send us a screenshot.
Go. Just watch it. Find a way to watch this movie and watch it. I mean, it does exist on DVD, but it's probably hard, not too easy to find. Yeah. I probably have one of the only copies. But also, I don't think there's anyone who will be making movie off this DVD that's gonna, you know, be significantly impacted if the, like, handful of people who decide to watch it based on this movie find other means of watching it.
Yeah.
It's very enjoyable. I think it's very enjoyable. If you like Raising Arizona, if you like Shoot 'Em Up, if you like Skeet Ulrich or Gary Oldman, if you want to see Gary Oldman do a silly role where he's just like a weird guy, I loved Skeet Ulrich in this actually as well. Because I think the only thing I'd seen him in before this was Scream, where he's obviously not a very nice guy.
Yeah.
And him as Billy is actually, I think his name is Billy in Scream as well, right?
I think so, yeah.
So him as Billy in Nobody's Baby is actually just like a really nice character. Yeah. It's a fun movie.
Thank you for joining us. We've really enjoyed doing this episode, I think, because it was, you know, as we said, fun episodes. Usually comparing something very serious with something super silly and funny, but I think this is almost lined up to the point where I wouldn't officially call this a fun episode.
It I mean, we're going to still publish it as the fun episode slot, but it definitely was more similar than I remember to them being.
Sweet.
The next few episodes are all Disney remakes. We're back. I can't remember if I've said it before, but we've kind of lined up February, March to be the kind of time that we do. I think the goal was between my birthday and Nick's birthday is when we do our Disney remakes each year. So there are a few of those coming. And then what should be a very fun episode, I think our next fun episode, because it's episode 100 will be our next fun episode. And Nick picked which ones we were doing for that.
I don't even remember.
It's going to be an interesting duo. It is a movie that Nick has wanted me to watch for a while. And a movie that I love.
Oh, I know what it is.
Anyway, thanks for joining us. And like Nick said, please join our Discord. I can't remember what the other thing you said was. And join our Discord.
Mailing list on our website.
Oh, our mailing list.
ItTakes2.co.nz.
And leave a review on Rotten Tomatoes for Nobody's Baby if you watch it.
Thank you again for listening.
All right, bye.